our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine, as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It is not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. Feel like it's been a wild year. It's actually like an epic day for us to have a conversation, bro, in a lot of ways, because the elections are today and I didn't even know.
Yeah.
I had no fucking idea. So I see these podcasts, like my idea for how I see these podcasts is like, it's like a postcard from me in the past to me in the future. Like I can always go back to this moment and I can be like, that's that motherfucker, like, from fucking November 4th, 2020. Because that dude is fucking different than the dude 15 years ago or 14 or 16 years ago. Yeah, fuck it. The 4 years, right, is like the election years, which I had no fucking clue about. I grew up in Brooklyn, bro. We didn't have elections. I didn't know anybody that was a Democrat or a Republican. That shit is crazy. Like, bro, we're just all poor. You know, we don't give a fuck about no politics. We got poor, like, immigrants from Europe. We got poor black dudes. We got poor Puerto Rican. Poor Chinese dude. We're just poor and we're just trying to fucking figure it out. There's no fucking politics. Now I get older, I move into these other places. Motherfuckers got politics everywhere. It's shit crazy. I don't know nothing about politics. I didn't even know today was the elections, bro. I'm walking around, all these people are fucking strolling and shit. I'm like, damn, it feels tense out here. And then my Instagram was like, today's election day. I was like, you might as well be fucking Halloween, bro.
Yo, that's funny, bro. I love the view on the podcast. I think that's real. You know, from you here to you in the future. Being disconnected, there's a truth to that. So, and I appreciate that. I appreciate that truth. You know, I disconnect for probably 6 hours, you know, when I sleep. And that's about it. Because I'm so driven and I'm so fearful of failing that I am just wildly obsessed about winning. I'm just wildly obsessed about it, which definitely just comes from a fear of failure. And I'm fully aware of that. But I appreciate that. You know, I appreciate that truth for sure.
Bro, life's so tell me, bro, you said like things are crazy right now. What's going on? Like what?
Yeah. So launching a book this month, the 12 things they wanted to teach you in high school, but couldn't. It's a personal development book for educators. You know, after 15 years in education, I say around year 10, I started losing my voice. I started losing my voice in education, and the purpose of why I ever went into it was to be impactful. And when administration changed, I knew at some point I would have to veer out. And that's where our path started to cross. And I had that crazy, and I still do, I'm a health fanatic, and I still have a group of girls and guys that I train with, and I needed to have those two worlds collide so I can live my best truth. And now it's to the space where I can. So I launched an educational consulting firm where we're going into schools and speaking to universities about how to teach educators how to be more self-aware, empathetic, and curious. Because I believe, not just that I believe, but the science will back it, that educators that have the ability to be impactful or form connections with their students are the ones that can really influence their lives and change the course of their lives. And all of the issues and challenges that I went through on a very low scale, but nonetheless challenges, comparatively on a low scale, were all derailed because of an educator. You know, at some point, every racist was somebody's teacher. at some point, every bigot was somebody's teacher. At some point, every hater was somebody's teacher. And when we have the ability to impact our educators, we can change the universe. So that's my mission. And on top of that, having four kids and a wife and merging these worlds, it's been a transition. It's a transition for everybody. So it's a full steam ahead effort. And I'm sticking with my routine, my training routine. So it's not as though I gave up my desire to be physical and work out and having four kids and they're all going in different directions. My wife and I, Kelly and I are managing that. It's an all hands on deck, constant juggle. And I'd say spinning plates all at the same time while building a mission, while building a business that speaks to my mission.
I love it. You know, that speaks to me a lot because I remember when I was in high school, probably in my class, like one of my teachers said, I'm most likely to end up in prison or dead in mm-hmm. my class. And that shit fucking rings out, you know, mm-hmm. that shit like sticks. And but I have like a real fuck you personality. Like there's this personality test that's used for, I don't know, maybe from the beginning of time. It's called the Enneagram. And it talks about human beings being 9 archetypes. And I fall into the 8th archetype. And the 8th archetype has a primal need to go against something. Like, that's why I, like, honestly, like, that's why I've, like, I look to real, like, I've been going against something my whole life. Like I needed that thing. Like when I heard, like, I'm most likely to end up dead or in jail, it didn't resonate at first because I actually took it with pride because that was really the direction I was going. I was like, oh, that's what I'm going for. And but then, like, when the shift happened, I was like, fuck you, bitch. And I showed up to school and I was in my second year of pre-med with a 3.9 GPA. And she was like, holy shit, I thought you were dead. Cause like I dropped out of school when I was 14, you know? So like, but it's, yeah, for sure. It's a teacher, mentor, role model, like somebody who crosses our motherfucking path. That's like, you know what, Robert, I fucking believe in you, man. Like you can do this shit. Like, yes. Like there's people that have done this before, bro. And like, you can do it too. And like, what if he told you there was no failure? What if he told you that, you know? Because like, I come from a sports background too. A little different, right? Cause it's like, it's combat and single, but still sports. Like nobody wants to fucking lose. But the reality was like, when I was competing, I started to realize I learned my greatest lessons on my losses. Because that's when I realized like, I'm not shit. And I'm amazing. And I'm not anything. Like it is what it is, you know? Fuck that. Fuck losses, man.
So it's my, I'd say it took a few years to combine both, have those two worlds. And I do use the word collide because everything that has shaped my reality has come from my family and it's come from the people that my family gave me the opportunity to be around, including our educators. And I grew up in a beautiful town. I grew up in a beautiful area and I had incredible experiences. And at the same time, and I've had opportunities to travel the world and the country because of that. And at the same time, I didn't get a free pass. You know, I didn't get a free pass from, you know, being Robbie A from Yorktown in Westchester County because, you know, when I came out of that, I was just a black guy that nobody gave anything about. And that reality was real. And I, you know, and I have stories to tell because of it. And when I reflect back on all of those things, the only difference between me and some of my friends that didn't make it is grace. And I'd also say that I just happen to be in a little bit better situation because maybe that person just had somebody kind of touch them. You know, whether it was an educator or a coach that was able to move me out of the way, and I avoided a lot of issues because of it. So when we walk in to our educational system, and it's a broken system, Rome. I mean, our educational system is a broken system. But the people inside of it are broke, but they aren't broken. you know, their hearts are broke, but they are, but their hearts aren't broken. So when we have a chance to speak to the hearts of our educators and speak to their needs, as you just described, and we have four essential human needs. I can go into them if you like.
Yeah, go
and,
for it,
bro. And when we speak to those needs, we can empower our educators to be everything that they're supposed to be. So they can teach and inspire our kids to be everything that they're supposed to be. And people don't do the things that they got to do, because you hear that a lot of times. I'm just doing what I got to do. And oftentimes it's because you didn't do the things you were supposed to do. And when we don't do the things that we're supposed to do, we can turn around and say, well, I just didn't know. And in part, that's true. And when we speak to people's needs and we recognize what they are, now you don't have to do the thing you got to do. And now you know what you're supposed to do and who you're supposed to be. And that's the gap, and that's the mission, and it's achievable, and it's measurable. So I can go into those needs if you like. It's totally up to you.
Yeah, for sure. Let's dive in.
So I went into personal development when I was 12 years old. I would say 12, yeah, around 12 years old, when I lost. I lost, and I lost miserably. It was the first year playing football, and my dad loved football. And we had this team. It was stacked athletically. Some of my closest friends that went on to play Division I lacrosse, captain their lacrosse teams, and the most talented athletes. And not only did we not win a game in football, we didn't even get a first down. And I was so broken over that season. My heart was broken, truthfully. I said, I will never let this happen again. And I started training obsessively. And what I realized is that my ability to train is only part of it, because not everybody wants to run hills with Rob at 11 o'clock at night when it's snowing sideways in the middle of January on the East Coast. I have to connect with my friends, and I have to connect with my teammates on a different way. And I just started becoming additionally obsessed about personal development and reading and absorbing. At that point, it was VHS and listening to the greatest coaches, from John Wooden and Phil Jackson, and listening to them talk and listen to their groove and listen to how dominant they were, you know, even down the Red Auerbach, it was the Boston Celtics, and just absorbing all of their stuff, and then listening to athletes and what they do, and then Tony Robbins, and then Les Brown, and then Wayne Dyer, Zig Ziglar, and absorbing all of these information from the time that I was 12 all the way up until now. I was taught, you know, I'd say by one of the greatest personal development speakers is Tony Robbins, and he talked about the needs, and I've been applying them ever since I heard, and really speaking and teaching people how to apply and identify their needs. So we all have all four of these needs, and I've been able to apply them to the teams I've coached, the players I train, and it's helped us. It has changed the course of our lives once we understand what they are and how we apply them. And the first need that we all have is a need for certainty. We want to know that when we walk into the room that the roof isn't going to fall. We want to know that as we're moving through the day that we won't be shot or killed. And we're all going to fulfill that need of certainty in a positive, negative, or neutral way. A negative way of being certain would be to act out, if we're talking about an educational context, where if I fall off the chair, I know the teacher is going to act a certain way. If I slouch in my seat and I put the hood in my hair, hood on my head, you know, I'm probably going to get maybe some negative attention. I'm going to be certain. Or if I don't show up to class, then we have a second need, and it's a need for uncertainty. Because if we know what we're going to get, when we're going to get it all the time, when we get it, you know, we're probably going to be bored out of our mind. And that need for uncertainty can be found from people that love to travel, and you hear that from them. And that need for uncertainty can be met by traveling, and that's a great way. And also a need, a burning desire for uncertainty can be met in leadership, where we know that we might have a kid that might look a little bit wild. Really what he needs is he just needs a change of pace. And in business, walking into the same building, doing the same thing day after day after day, brings that level of certainty to people, which they desire, but also that person on your staff that might need that level of uncertainty, that might be the person that you want to make sure gets on the plane. That might be the person that you want to change course and make sure that they're out and about and they're changing up their routine, and you're going to get more out of them because of it. And then we have a third human need, which is a need for love and connection. And, you know, love is what we aspire to, but connection is unfortunately what a lot of people settle for. So instead of falling in love and staying in love, you know, some people, you know, they'll settle on getting a dog, or they'll settle on getting a pet, because love is too scary and connection is what they settle for. Or staying in a broken relationship that isn't really filling their heart, but they feel connected, but the love is gone. But we all have that love. We all have that deep desire and that need to feel love. And then we have a fourth need, and that's a need for significance, that the things that I'm doing matter, that the things that I'm doing are impactful, that I'm changing the course of, you know, my life or somebody else's. Now, the course of our life is going to be dictated by what needs we put at the top or at the bottom. Because if your need is significance, and that's your number one need, and you live in the hood, you might not be able to get significance any other way than holding a gun up to somebody's face. Because if I hold a gun up to your face, I'm automatically significant. You're going to pay attention to me. You know who I am. That's why violence is always going to be here, because until we figure out how to fill people's needs, they're going to fill it in any other way. Because again, we're going to get it in a positive, negative, or neutral way. Versus teaching somebody how to feel significant by identifying, hey, you know what, Rome? I know that you can do something a little bit more than what you are. And this is what I'm envisioning for your life. And you speak that into people's lives, and then they have ability to say, you know what? Maybe I can get out of here. Maybe I can change the course of my life. Maybe I don't need to be. So if your need is for love and connection, I know that your life is going to be completely different. You may go into a life of service. You may following a nursing path because you just have that deep passion for love. So based on what we prioritize as far as our 1, 2, 3, or 4 needs, that's going to dictate the course of our life. And the faster we can identify the needs of people, specifically in leadership and in education, we can inspire, challenge, and teach them how to create a life that fills their needs. And that's how we can ultimately change the way that we're living our lives and interacting with each other.
It's rough. It's rough, like growing up and, you know, there's only a few ways to get out. You know, it's like, yeah, you hustle, you rob, you scam, you play ball, or you're smart. But like, at least those are the models that we're given. But the reality is, like, it's changing so fast. So I have a perspective too, if you're interested in hearing it on education.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
I believe it needs to be torn down from the top and from the inside as well. I truly, honestly believe that, bro. I swear. I believe that. I mean, these are just beliefs that I have right now that could fucking change tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? And like, the reality for me is like, school fucking sucked. I fucking hated school. I did college for 7 years. I might have met one lightly inspired teacher or two lightly inspired teachers in my whole career, which, come on, like, what are the fucking odds? Like, I lived in New York City, like one of the greatest cities on the planet, where people fucking flock to, supposedly, because there's so much opportunity. And I'm learning from people that I wouldn't leave my kids with right now. But we leave our kids with these fucking people, with these institutions that have these fucking belief systems that they're cramming down the throats of our children. And we don't align with that. People are like, are you a Democrat or Republican? I don't align with either one. How about that? Like, I really don't. And like, both and either one is going to be feeding the shit down the fucking drain. And I believe that the only model that truly works is like, yeah, okay, I understand. Kids need to learn how to fucking read. Kids need to learn how to do math. Kids also need to learn how to do art. Kids also need to learn how to move their fucking bodies. And not just for a sport, but just to fucking move, to enjoy this fucking blessing that God gave us. Look at this fucking thing. It can fuck. It can feed. It can fight. It can throw balls if it needs to. It can do all these things. It can hunt. It can gather. It can explore. And like, we're not taught any of that shit. We're literally put in fucking cages. I was in New York City and I was driving by. They have a 20, 25 foot fucking cage fence outside of my fucking school. That shit looks like a fucking prison. That's a prison yard. I used to visit my buddies in prison. They might have had smaller fences than we did. You know what I'm saying? And we got armed guards making sure that people don't get in or out. What the fuck is going on? This is how we treat our children. We're preparing them for prison. Literally. They get up when we fucking tell them to get up. They sit down when we tell them to sit down. They eat when we tell them to eat. They learn stuff that's not really true. We're finding that out every fucking day. From black history to white history to yellow history, none of it is fucking true. It's just an interpretation of whatever the fuck they want us to fucking learn. And now they have them doing like common core math. What the fuck are you talking about? Teach them how to count money. Teach them how to run a business. Teach them how to do their fucking taxes. Teach them how to have interactions with people. Teach them how to set something up on the internet where people, teach them how to be a journalist. Teach them how to tell truth. Teach them how to fight. Teach them when to fight. Teach them when not to fight. Teach them how to love. Teach them how to fuck. Don't give them that stupid ass fucking sex education that we were getting as kids that wasn't even fucking true. Or youth dares telling us that fucking weed is going to make us crackheads. Like, come on, son. How the fuck do we have all these dudes, these young black dudes and old black dudes and young black men and young white men and young yellow men and old white men and old yellow men in prison for nonviolent fucking crimes for selling and smoking weed when it's legalized recreationally in like 13 or 14 states now? How the fuck are these people sitting in prison? Like, there's so many questions, and it all starts from the education system. That's where I bring it back to, because like, realistically, it's like, I don't understand why. How can a child pick the career that they're going to work in for the rest of their life as an 18-year-old child? They've never experienced it. Apprentice, 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 apprentice. That's the only model that's ever worked in history, the apprenticeship model, where it's like, come work here for 3 months. See what being a trainer is like. Come work here for 3 months. See what being a doctor is like. Come work here for 3 months. See what being a fucking dominatrix is like. Whatever the fuck you want to be great at it. You know what I'm saying? Like, be fucking great at it. If you're going to be a dominatrix, be the best fucking dominatrix. You're going to be a cross-dressing performer, be a cross-dressing performer. You want to be a boxer, be the best fucking boxer. You want to be a trainer, be the best trainer. But like, learn the fucking ropes. See if that's really what you want to do.
and that leads to speaking, you know, finding and speaking your truth. And I'll say, having 15 years experience in education and being a classroom teacher and being a high school coach, I don't want to say I've seen it all, but I've seen it all, and I've experienced a lot, other than the times that we're living in, which no one has seen. And we're all seeing it for the first time. I think there's a lot of people that would stand by your side for tearing the entire thing down and ripping and building it back up. I believe there's a lot of people that would stand by your side. And coming from the perspective of being on the inside for so long, it gave me the motivation to write my book, because I know that we have beautiful people inside those walls. I do. And the system itself is breaking their heart and it's breaking their spirit, and they aren't telling their full truth. And if we can inspire, challenge, and teach our educators or develop our educators personally and allow them to rediscover their truth, then we have a chance to make those inner connections. Because it's a lot more efficient to build people up than it would be, which, again, I know there's a lot of people that would stand with you, and I get it. Believe me, I get it. Believe me, I get it. Yeah. And that, and anyone that, and friends and family that are doing that now, I'm fully supportive. And my wife and I, Kelly and I, have had that conversation extensively, because it just makes sense for us. And she's in education. She's wildly bright and wildly passionate about it. knowing that we can impact our educators, it will bring immediate impact to our kids. So we can get back to, or I should say start, I don't know if there was ever a time when we were, develop our people that are developing our kids. And when we can make that our foundation, when we can make personal development, true personal development, not PD days as they stand now, where oftentimes community members, board members, the state is pushing down an agenda that's shoved into the teachers. So on these personal development days, on these half days where the kids are out, it's typically a catch-up day, or it's typically you got to get this done day. And it doesn't do anything for our kids. Yeah. And it definitely doesn't do anything for our educators. So when we can get to a space where we're personally developing, you know, and you've traveled extensively and, you know, lived in Costa Rica and I mean, you've built communities. I mean, you've changed the lives of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of kids that were living and sleeping on the street. And you've given them home, and you've given them play, you've given them food, and you've given them direction, and you've given them confidence, you've given them faith, and you've saved hundreds of children's lives. And in part, at some point, someone saved yours. Someone said to you something that brought something out of you that you were able to instill in somebody else. And when we can develop our teachers and make that our focus, make that our point of education, doesn't need to be the month, it doesn't need to be the first period through the ninth, but it needs to be part of our ecosystem, which it is it now. And that's the basis of my book. And I believe if we can take that perspective as a community, as a society, that we have to pour into the development of our educators, they'll start to change our kids.
I think there's a big shift happening right now where like people are being exposed to like homeschooling and shit. And like, yes. Dude, if you're a great educator, I mean, all right, you're going to have educators listening to this, right? Like,
yeah.
So I'd like to speak into them because I have an idea. That's what I am. In a lot of ways, I'm just like a conduit for like ideas. They just come through me. And some of them I use, a lot of them I give away. Like I don't want a million different businesses. But if you're an educator, how much do educators make?
It depends where you are. So it's certainly going to be dictated across the country.
Like, I don't know, like whatever. Like,
your highest end classroom teacher can make anywhere from $150,000 one of your higher end school districts, and outside, you know, across the country, you know, there might be teachers making us, you know, 45 to 50,000.
Okay, perfect. So 150,000 to 45 and 50,000. Let's say they're making 80,000 on average, right? Because the 150 are the outliers that live in like the really rich places and so on and so forth, right? So let's say it's 80,000. 80,000 divided by 12. Like we're looking at how much they need to be making monthly, right? Like that's the nut that they have to fill. So 80,000 divided by 12, where are you at? Like 6,500, maybe a little bit less than 6,500. Gross. The reason why I'm saying gross is because when they're a business owner, they don't pay as much taxes. That's kind of how it works. So, but let's say at 6,000, let's say 6,500, right? There's a lot of people out there that pay Waldorf $1,500 to $3,000 every month, up to $5,000, $6,000 every month, depending on the state that you live in, right? Per child. Waldorf keeps probably around 10 to 12 kids per classroom, right? So you're looking at 12 kids. I'm a teacher, I'm an educator, right? Like I can handle groups of 40 to 50 kids comfortably with an assistant. But let's say we don't go that far. Let's say we go 6 kids. Let's say we go 7 kids. You get each parent to pay you $1,000 a month for their education. You get 7 children and you fucking educate them for 6 to 8 hours a day. There's your work day. There's your $7,000. Now you're You're like, you're blessing these kids' lives. We're in inner city schools, 32 to 35 plus kids per class, one teacher, no assistant. Get the fuck out of here. I don't give a fuck what system you're teaching from. Those kids are going to be retarded. Like, they are not getting anything from the stream. They're the freaks. Like, the ones that are going to make it are the ones that you would put in the fucking closet and they would have made it anyway. Like, they're, you know what I'm saying? Like, bro, like, what the fuck are they learning? Like, all right, if there's educators listening to this, start this fucking business tomorrow. You can literally give out flyers, offer a free month of classes, free month of classes. Tell them you have a limit of 12 children because you could be making 12 grand a month. 12 grand a month, that's 144 grand. Almost net. You have almost no expenses. You can run that class in your house. 12 grand a month being an educator. That's 144 grand. Like, you, that's it. You don't need a lot of people. You just need a few people paying you a moderate amount. If you're in a rich area, you could be charging up to $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 per child. Now at $4,000 per child, you're at 24 grand a month. 24 grand a month is nothing to fucking shake your dick at if you're making fucking 6 grand a month. Gross. So educators, like, there might be some gold. I don't know. But like, if you try this, you're going to do it. Like, it's going to happen. I know tons of single moms. I know tons of people that are always looking for some sort of educator to fucking help them with their kids. And it's like, come on, lead generation. You need 12 kids. You could do that with like your eyes closed. Just tell a bunch of people on your Facebook, instead of telling them about who they shouldn't vote for, tell them about what you're offering the world and share your love with the world. If you're a great educator, educate. And you could take that money and reinvest it into new education systems that you can learn. Waldorf, Rye, you can learn tons of shit. They have fucking certification classes, anything, wilderness, CPR. You can learn anything. You could be super teacher in 1 year. 1 year, you could be fucking super teacher. They would give you a symbol on your chest. All right, that's my rant, bro.
Yeah, you know, so what's happening now is that people are forming what's called pods, and those pods are being created in people's garages. Those pods are being created in people's basements. Those pods are being created. I've actually seen pods created in storage units where people are using old storage units, putting it on their property, and they're bringing these pods together in their neighborhood. And they're paying educators $500 to $1,000 a month, putting all the kids together, putting the classroom in those storage units. And parents are going to work. There's one teacher for 8 kids, and people are off and running. That's happening now. So the shift will come from our educators that are graduating, our folks that aren't going to be able to find jobs, that are ready to go, and they're going to run pop-up schools. And that's the shift that's happening now. It's happening right now. And that is the gold. In Rome, it isn't just disruptive, it's transformative, and it's necessary.
And it's right. Thank you, COVID. Thank you, fucking COVID. Thank you. Like, all these people are like, this has been my hardest year. Just wait what comes out of this year. We've literally advanced hundreds of years as a human species in this last year. Like, people don't understand, like, what kind of things come out of the crucible when you put in, like, the human fucking, the mold, and, like, what happens. Like, some of you motherfuckers aren't going to come out because you're not built for that shit. But the ones that are going to come out, you're going to be diamonds. Mwah. If you can come out of this shit this year looking like a fucking diamond, like, oh my goodness, like, you're ready. You're ready for the next evolution. You know what I mean? You're graduating into college or high school, whatever the fuck this is on the humanity spectrum. Like, it feels like we're graduating. It's like, it feels like we're graduating. Like, but you got to have some schoolyard fights. You got to be turned down. You got to have your prom. Like, there's going to be, like, processes, you know? And, like, fuck, I love it. This has been my best year yet, bro. The most struggles I've ever had in a short amount of time. And holy shit, bro. I found out what was inside. You know, they say you squeeze an orange, you get orange juice. You squeeze a human, you see what's inside. So I'm so blessed. I am so blessed that I had the experience of being squeezed. Bro, what was it like as a kid for you growing up?
My parents probably had, I think they had a PhD in parenting. I do. My dad and mom both grew up in the Bronx. My dad grew up in the South Bronx in a really rough area. And my mom grew up in the Bronx in a nice area. And when they decided to move, my mom wanted to move up the tracks a little bit, if you would. And my dad said, no, we're going to the suburbs. And that was unheard of. There weren't black families in the suburbs. That just didn't happen. And my dad bought a home in an incredible town in Westchester County in New York. And we lived on a dead end block with a brook in the back and an incredible house. And my dad, when we moved in, my dad didn't know anyone. He didn't know any neighbors. And I had somebody just ride their bike down the street and introduce themselves. And, you know, that opened up my dad to people. My mom was always loving and caring, but at the same time aware of her surroundings. And then as I walked into the school systems, I was met with open arms, and in part because I was athletic and I was able to bring some value in that space. And by and large, just had really incredible people. And my parents found a way to keep me balanced. And I think this was part of their PhD, where I still had family in the Bronx. So I lived in the suburbs, and I would spend every weekend in the city, whether it was Sunday dinners, whether it was church in the morning at 8, 9 o'clock, and Sunday dinners and walking the streets and being in Brooklyn and being in Fordham Road and walking off the Grand Concourse. And that was my life. And then we would leave. And I would go back to the suburbs. So it gave me the ability to carve out an understanding of the world. So I didn't live in a bubble the entire time. And every year, my family, my papa would put us on a plane, and we'd fly to Barbados to see our family. And we'd spend time with our family, and traveling was super important to my Nana. And so we'd get out to London and various parts of the country, and then various parts of the world. And when sports took over in high school, everything changed, and things started changing for me, because I started losing those experiences as far as travel, but I started gaining them as far as relationships and commitment. And then through college, it was more or less a lot of the same, if you would. And once I walked into college, I realized why that PhD in parenting was so important, because I was, I would say, respected and loved, and I have such admiration for where I was from. And once I went to college, none of it mattered, because I was just a black kid. And when I started reflecting back, because everything was so beautiful, you know, you forget those pitfalls and you forget those potholes that you went through. And when I went to college, that's where it started flooding. And then with the murder of George Floyd, everything started resurfacing. Every one of the trials, because again, I had such a beautiful experience, but it was suppressed. All of the pain was suppressed. And one of the first times that I realized when I got to college that I was different was when I was walking with a group of my friends, and I was walking into a club, and I was grabbed from behind, and a police officer came behind the door, and he broke my two front teeth with a flashlight, and he said that I'm resisting arrest, and I'm under arrest for resisting arrest. And my parents, you know, I made a call, and my dad not only had the knowledge, but he also had the resources. And that experience was away. That experience didn't even exist. It was vanished that fast. Because my dad had the knowledge and the IQ,
and he had the resources to make it vanish. And when that experience took place, I started realizing all of the little pitfalls and the potholes that my parents had just gotten me through because of the way that they raised me. You know, I remember when, from that experience, I was reflecting, and I remember when we were pulled over and I was driving back from fishing with my dad, and we were down in the Bronx, and you can go out in the Sound for the day, and we're driving home and we're pulled over, and he puts his license and registration. I was maybe 10 or 11 years old. And I was reflecting back at this after this, my first experience of being profiled. He put his license and registration, and he put his keys up on the dash, and he put down the windows and made sure the internal light was on. It was maybe around 5 or 6 o'clock. And the police officer comes over to the door and he says, "May I have your license and registration?" He says, "No." The police officer comes over to the door and he says, "Open the console." And my dad opens the console and he says, "Open the glove box." And my dad says, "When I open the glove box, you're going to see my gun." And he has his hands up on the wheel. He says, "When I open that glove box, you're going to see my gun." And he said it to him 3 times. And he said, "I'm a cop. So I carry my gun with me. So when I open that," and he said it with such purpose and such calm, because my dad knew the hate that was in the world. He understood it. Being a police officer didn't change how he approached white men in authority, even though he was a cop, an award-winning black cop. And I have stories on top of stories on when I didn't get a pass and how I didn't get a free pass. And the difference between me and maybe anybody else, as I've already reflected, is grace and faith, but also because of my parents and the way that they raised me and put, I would say, true love in my heart and my spirit, that even from the first and not the only experience, my mom said, "People are good." She said, "You know, people are good, and no matter what, we're going to see bad people, but understand that people are good, and you don't need to hate all people because of the ones that aren't." And my mom's just spoke that into my spirit, and my dad supported that. So I really say that, you know, I give them a PhD in parenting for my sister and I, and they were able to make sure, they made sure that regardless of the situations and the stories that I have to tell, that no matter what, it didn't harden my heart. And I'm just, you know, I'm eternally grateful to them for that, and for all of the experiences that they've given me, just because of the town that we moved in and the athletics that we were able to be a part of and the accomplishments. It's really life-altering and changing, man.
Sounds like your dad was a very wise and disciplined man. That like, you can hear it in the way that he presented that the pistol was in the glove box. Like, yeah. very disciplined, because once that fight or flight turns on for homeboy outside the car, there's a fucking problem. Yeah. He doesn't give a fuck if you're a cop, if you're not a cop.
That's right.
You're just a black dude in a car, right?
A big, huge, strong.
He was a big,
powerful
dude?
Monster, Rome. You know, I always laugh. You know, all my cousins and uncles always call me Little Robbie, and you know, we've been at events together and we've traveled together, and you know, I'm not really that.
I've met some of your fucking family, bro.
Yes,
we were in Atlanta, bro.
Yes, you're right.
I vibed with, oh man, what?
My Uncle Rick.
Uncle Rick is a big boy, bro. Uncle Rick is a big boy.
Right. So my dad was bigger than him. So yeah, you know, and you met. Yeah, we were at an event and went to. Went to a basketball game.
That was my first basketball game ever.
Oh, that's a special way to take it in. We had the private box. We had the private box for the game. And yeah, we had that's a special way to take in your first game. But yeah, you met Uncle Rick and my cousin Mimi. So
good,
you know firsthand.
Good people, man. Like, straight. I dug them, bro.
No, I appreciate it. But yeah, that's, and my dad was the oldest and he was bigger than my Uncle Rick. So, you know, they always laugh and call me Little Robbie for a reason. And, you know, I'm not a little guy, but
it's all comparative, bro.
Comparatively,
it's all comparative, bro.
Oh my god,
to me, you're big, Robbie, bro. To the-
and I'm a midget, man. I'm nothing, you know. I'm nothing compared to the rest of my family, for sure. I'm the smallest.
What was it like? What was the first thing that you fell in love with?
The first thing I fell, you know,
experience, process,
working out. It was so effortless and fluent to me.
How did you know you were in like love with it? Like, what was the moment where it was just like, this is my shit?
Results. So growing up, I loved Walter Payton. And after that first year of playing sports and getting our teeth kicked in, I didn't know anything about training. I didn't know anything about working out, but I knew it was never going to happen again. And we went 0-6. We didn't even score. Not only did we not score a touchdown, Rome, we didn't even have a first down, you know, and, you know, that's 10 yards, you know, our offense couldn't get 10 yards. That's how bad we were. And I just started running, and Walter Payton was my athletic idol. And he ran hills and he ran hills and he ran hills. He ran hills in the heat. He ran hills in the sand. And I just followed his training based on what I saw in videos. And I did it on blind faith. And the next year of playing sports, we went undefeated and we dominated. And my dad was so proud. My mom, my parents, my grandparents, my aunts, knuckle, everyone was so happy. I said, I will never not be. I will always be in shape. I will always be strong. And it was the perfect mesh of training and achievement at the same time. It was the achievement that led to the love and the passion. I'd say that was the moment, seeing my parents' face at the end of the year and winning a trophy, seeing their joy that it brought to my family, for my sister. I'm like, how can I not do this? I'd be selfish not to prepare as hard as I physically can to bring them this level of joy. So I'd say that was the moment, seeing it, having, putting in the work physically, seeing the work pay off and achieving what I really wanted was just them happy. That was the moment that I knew I would always be ready.
Well, how did you know teaching was the thing? Like, did you go to college and get like a degree in teaching?
Yeah. So I graduated with double major psych and sociology and certainly a deep desire to play football and had opportunities to play after. And my dad had said once I wasn't going to play football anymore, he said, why don't you sub? You know, why don't you go into a school and become a substitute? And I got out at 2:30 and the day was over and I could go fish or go in the weight room or do whatever. I said, this is amazing. and so that at that point I went back and I went to grad school and picked up my master's in science and then from there got my first job in Westchester County when everybody said it would never happen. So that's what led me into teaching, in large part because I do have a deep-seated passion for children. I have a deep-seated passion to give back, but it also allowed me to do the other things that I loved, which is training. It had a set schedule. I'm out at 2:30 on a regular day. I could train athletes. I could be on an athletic field by 3:00 and I can train groups of athletes. And then I could go home. I'm like, sign me up. So I'm doing two things that I love. It just was so, so perfect. It was.
I love it. That sounds incredible, bro. That sounds incredible.
It was a perfect mesh. You know, people were going home and I was going to the field. You know, I was going to train. I had athletes to work with. I had people wanting to get better, wanting to get stronger, wanting to get faster, wanting to pay for college. You know, parents that were paying and really betting on my programming for college.
Yeah, for scholarship.
Exactly. Investing in us as trainer and athlete. You know, that I never took that for granted, and I still don't. I never took that lightly. I never looked at that as another thing to do or a job. Like, you're paying me to do this.
I get to do this, and you're paying me.
Like, that's that was so. Like, we're gonna run hills together, and I'm gonna get paid doing this now. Like,
hell yeah!
What? You know, like, we're gonna eat together. We're gonna drink this water together. Like, we're gonna grind together. We're gonna be in the, like, and we're like, what? And in 3 years, we are going to stand as a family and sign your letter of intent. Just such a privilege, honestly, Rome. And I certainly have athletes that are still in my programming now, not to the scale that I had at that point, because we scaled very fast over the summer, working with over 100 athletes. All the top college guys in the area would come home and train with me. So we scaled super fast.
Is that the age you like to work with?
Yeah, for sure. You know, my wheelhouse is, and I've expanded it now. If you were to ask me a decade ago, I could never have a conversation with somebody that wasn't an athlete. I just couldn't. I didn't have anything for them.
No, I mean like ages. I mean like
yeah. So when I first started out, it was middle school. It was high school to college. That was it. That was the only age I worked with. And now I've evolved and I've gotten smarter and certainly I have a deeper desire to feed. And I do use that word specifically, the spirits and the minds of people. So now, you know, I've expanded it and do more consulting athletically on that side to help people. But I still do have that core group of athletes at high school to college age that I work with on a much smaller and private scale.
I love it. I have so many ideas, bro, that are like pulsing through my head. Like, you don't even, like, it's crazy. Like, you're like things are just firing. We'll talk after this. I have like some crazy fucking ideas, bro.
Yeah. I'm
very familiar with like similar models and I followed similar models. Like, it, bro, like, dude, it's crazy.
So Rome, and I'll say, now, and that was really the quest. And that's where our paths started to cross, because I love education. Honestly, Rome, I love teachers. And walking into a school building every year, every day, under the leadership that I had, it was the perfect mesh. And when our principal, Mr. Longobardi, was preparing for retirement, he insulated us and he kept all of the noise away from us, all of that top down from the state, all of the in outside from the Board of Education, all of the push from the superintendent. He kept it away from us. And I remember the first time when he hired me and he asked me what I want to do. And I explained, you know, I said, I can create a curriculum. And he said, go do it. Rome, I ran out of his office so fast. And he's like, no, come back. I was like, I'll do it. I got it. Like,
I fucking love him, bro.
I'll ask you if I need any help. Like,
yeah,
if you're giving me the keys to the kingdom to go be creative, done. You know, done. You will never hear from me again.
Yeah, you're an artist, bro.
And he didn't for 13 years. He didn't hear a boo. He didn't hear a complaint. He would walk up just to knock to be like, you still work here, you know? And because he recognized he was such an incredible leader, he knew how to influence me. And I talked about the model. He allowed me to find significance through education. And I will create it. And I will not, because my second need is certainly love and connection. Like, you will not let, I will not fall short knowing. And he knew what my need was. And I knew once he started to leave that things were going to change. And that's where our paths started to cross, where I started bringing in mentorship and connecting with people on a higher level that can help fuel my passion for education, which I knew was leaving the classroom. And that's led to now, you know, building a firm, an educational consulting firm, where I work with schools and I work on the personal development side, and I bring programs and systems in place to help our educators and to help bring a system to help empower and develop our educators that are the front line of our kids. True personal development, which doesn't exist right now systematically for our educators. That's what I'm bringing, and that's what, you know, my team has created for our educational system. So I've been able to blend these two worlds of personal training, which I certainly have, and that's part of my book. And I still have my clients that I train. I was running off the field when I was on the phone. You're like, Rob, let's go. I was like, I know. And I was sprinting off the field with my guys. And now, you know, the rest of my day, the morning and afternoon, is built around consulting with schools, school districts, and universities. And that's how I'm filling my cup. And I would say really finding a way to create maximum impact for our schools.
All right. So growing up, what are some of the cartoons that you like to watch?
Smurfs. That was number one. Wow. I love the Smurfs. It was so fun. And then gummy bears. Wow. I loved gummy bears. It was on a little bit early for me. I was a bit of a sleeper, you know, as a kid. You know, I was a huge eater, which I still am, but I was a bit of a sleeper. So gummy bears was on a little early, but I could watch a Smurf marathon all day. And then it would close out with Voltron.
Nice.
So those were the three for sure.
I love it.
Yeah.
What does your daily life look like now? Like, what time do you go to bed? What time do you wake up? What are you eating? How much are you training? What are you doing for leisure activities?
Yeah. So right now, I would say specifically for building a consulting firm, you know, Rome, I'm in the tunnel. So I shut it down anywhere from 12 to 12:30, sometimes a little bit later, and I'm up by 5, and we're off and running. So now that school is kicked back into session, I'm driving our 15-year-old, he just turned 15 3 weeks ago, driving our 15-year-old to school about an hour away from us. He's going to a great school, great private school. So I drop him off, and then I'm in the midst of now looking for office space in Connecticut, where he's going to school. So I'll spend my time and my day training and connecting and working on and within the firm throughout the day. After he's done with school, I'll grab him, get him to wherever he needs to be after he's done with sports, where we'll head in. At that point, depending on the day, early in the week, I'll get a workout in. So I'll work out at the house. Dinner, I'm plant-based. You know, everything that we eat is either a single ingredient food or straight from the earth. And then as much time, you know, Monday through Friday, which does get taxing at some points, but you know, close that out with my other three kids. And then just about get ready to shut it down. And I'll put in about 20 minutes, 30 minutes of reading at some point. Right before I shut it down. So that's really a Monday through Friday. And then Saturdays, we're a little bit closer as a family. We're a little bit tighter. So Kelly and I do our best to travel together to our kids' events. You know, we have four kids and all four play sports. You know, we have three boys and a girl. All three of our boys play lacrosse. And our two youngest are triathletes and CrossFitters. Our daughter is a CrossFitter and triathlete. So depending upon what part of the country they're in or what state that they're in, Kelly and I do our best to stay together and travel to all of their events together. So that's the shape of, I would say, you know, my day and my week. And then nutritionally, we are, Kelly is completely aligned with this. We are really consistent what we're fueling and how we're fueling our body. So typically, my morning will start with one of these. It's a 32-ounce green drink. So I'll have that as soon as I wake up. Yep. And this is my second because it's a little earlier in the week with according on the podcast. So I was able to get a workout in this morning beforehand. It's actually election day. So I was at the polls super early. And then as soon as I was out, hit a workout and got Bear off to school. Then Bear was, you know, was able to get him off to school. From there, I'll have a 32-ounce green drink. The second that I wake up, that's the first thing that I put into my body. And from the last meal that I have, because the scheduling and the days are long, I'll go 8 to 12 hours without food. So including the time that I slept, and I'll extend that as long as 12, which does happen, but no shorter than 8. That will be the gap that I'll take for not eating. And that allows my body to reset, allows my metabolism to work, allows me to be functional, clear, and keep my energy, and certainly allows my body to do its work, do its job. And we can do a deep dive in nutrition. From there, my first meal, I always travel with it. I'll have a mixed green salad during the week, Monday through Friday, travel with fruit. So I like sliced apples, some type of bar typically that Kelly might make, or I do like Lara bars, and I absolutely love what our mutual friend has created, Ed O'Keefe. He's created a beautiful product called Wake Up Foods. So I'll throw one of his waffles in, and I'll have that, and I'll snack on that. I hate to use the word snack, but that'll be my nutritional piece pretty much until I get home. And then again, we're plant-based, and Kelly, I think last night we had a single ingredient pasta. Barilla Plus makes a red lentil pasta. That's fantastic. It's strictly made from red lentils. Then I had a side of broccoli and spinach and pinto bean meatballs. So that was dinner last night. And that's a fair example of what my day nutritionally would look like.
What kind of house are you guys living in, and where?
Yeah, so we live in New York, in a nice area. It's a suburbs in Dutchess County. So it's, if you were to compare, so you're out on the West Coast. So it certainly wouldn't be, close to your property in Costa Rica, but you can can draw some comparisons.
I mean, I love upstate New York, bro. Like that's one of my favorite places. Like I love the nature out there.
It's tremendous, and it's been great for our family, and it was the right spot for them while they were super young. Our youngest now is 8, so now it's at a point where so much of what we do is south of where we live. So within a year we'll be moving south, and our kids will have to readjust, and certainly not living to the city, but the property and scale will be a little bit different than what they're accustomed to now, because they have space in the area that we live in Dutchess County. It's the original reason why
you live on like land now.
Yeah.
How much land? Is it like a big piece?
Yeah, it's over an acre or two. Nice. So it's like a football field, bro. Yeah. So they have space, to say the least.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and it's great, and it's the original reason why we moved up there, and it has given our family everything that we've done, from training to wiffle ball games to everything that we've done has happened in that space.
I love it.
And now as they're getting a little bit older, you know, we have to make our lives a little bit easier. So, you know, we're still in negotiations, figuring out how we can find a space that complements us as a family. But I'm most likely expecting that we'll scale down on the yard and, you know, keep the house nice, and that'll be okay. And our kids will make that adjustment.
So, all right. So this is like the imagination portion of the podcast.
Yeah.
So if you weren't a teacher / athletic trainer / consultant / author, what would you be? Or who would you be?
That's interesting. And I've had that conversation with myself a few times. I don't know, Rome, if I would be doing anything different. You know, I've always wanted to create a life that gave me the flexibility and the ability to work out twice a day. And COVID, to your point, was such a gift because that's what I did. That's how I lived. I was home. I was up at 5. I would work out. I wrote a book during COVID. I would work out again, and then it would be 6 o'clock. We'd be done with dinner. I was eating by 4:35, and we would have a movie on by 7, and our kids were going to bed at a normal time. It was just so to recreate that actual existence would definitely be the long-term goal. And I would do it through having the ability to train and work with a small group of select athletes. But I can't imagine not impacting schools through, now I would say, systems and programming. I just can't imagine not doing that. I just have such a passion for education. It really lights me up. It was just a matter of figuring out how to turn that light back on, because being in the classroom, unfortunately, once our leadership left, Mr. Longobardi, it wasn't it anymore. And it wasn't the teaching, it was the system that was pushing down, and that had to change. But Rome, I really gotta be honest, I don't think I would be doing really that much. I don't think I'd be doing that much different.
I love it. What is one thing you would love to upload into the minds of everyone in the world?
Grit.
What does that mean to you?
Grit is having the ability to overcome your challenges and your fears. And so many people and so many of us have just given up. And I do say give up even if you're existing. And I do say give up if you aren't challenging. I do say give up if you aren't chasing your dream. You know, at some point, you know, all of us have had a dream. We've all have had a vision for our life, and that's our dream. And that's the gift that we are given, to have an idea, a clue about the life that we are meant to live. And some of us go for it, and when we see it, and some of us are too afraid and settle and decide that this is going to be just good enough. And I believe if we just had more grit when we took some baby steps towards it, because so many folks that I've talked to and have mentored, and the thousands and thousands of families that I've worked with over the course of my time, some of them have gone in, Rome, and they're living their dream. I mean, they are living it. It doesn't mean it doesn't mean they don't have challenges, because they do. But I've been with some families that are living their dream, and their kids are too. Again, it's not without challenges. And then I've been with some people that you can see the break in their eyes.
No challenges is a nightmare, bro. Fuck that. Dreams always come with challenges. I was talking to my buddy, and he's got a very successful company in the 10 figures. And he told me, he's like, listen, bro. He's like, when I was younger, I was broke. And my only problem was I needed to make some money. And he's like, now I got money and I got way more fucking problems. So like, that, it's not going to make your problems go away. It'll just give you bigger problems. Yes. And if you got the grit, right, maybe you can handle it.
That's right.
What is the one book that you see yourself recommending over and over again throughout the years, giving as a gift or recommending?
Yeah. So depending upon the person that I'm speaking with, I would just say, you know, there's a few, depending upon some of the people that I'm speaking with, for some people it's the Bible, and it's knowing that will touch their heart. And so many of us are spiritual and we aren't necessarily religious, so that wouldn't really work. But for the folks that I that do connect with a higher power and do connect with the Lord, that is a space that I'll guide people to. And I know that has settled some people's heart to hear me say that, because it gave them permission to be who they're meant to be outside of their mom and their dad telling them to listen to God. So I know that has freed a number of people for sure. You know, recently, Rome, in the times that we're living in, Stamped by John Reynolds has just been a book that I've been pouring over and stamped. Yeah. I've been pouring over and reading so many times because, you know, Jason Reynolds has just created something. I think I said John, but Jason Reynolds has just created something so incredible, something so incredible, that I'm in awe of his ability to find his voice and share what we've gone through as people in this country, as Black and Brown people, and how we do have an opportunity as a society to rewrite, to change the futures of people, to make it right for everybody. And Jason Reynolds has created a masterpiece in Stamped. So, you know, that has been a book that I've been guiding people to, because it's just so necessary. It's just so necessary.
What kind of music are you listening to now when you're training?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So while I'm training, while I'm working out?
Yeah. Like, what's the shit that gets you fucking, like, that gets you training?
Yeah, so over the summer, I ran a 50-mile race. It was a goal that I had in my mind and something that I put on paper. And when COVID hit, I saw it as a time and as a gift to really be able to dial into my training. And during the course of running the race, the Oak Ridge 50, I didn't listen to anything. And running 50 miles in quiet and peace really makes you connect with your resolve. And I've learned that. And I've appreciated my voice, my own personal voice, you know, while training, and knowing that my own voice is enough. And, you know, taking on an event like that and knowing that your voice is enough, you can always fall back to it because it isn't going anywhere. So I'd say that has become my number one source of strength while I'm training. And then when I do turn the music on, you know, for those workouts where I'm moving weights, my kids have pushed me into Drake, and they love everything about Black and Brown music, which makes me super excited. But at the end of the day, I have always been a Biggie, Nas, Jay-Z guy, beginning with Nas. That's always been, you know, a cornerstone for me. And, you know, I'll probably never give up Eminem as well. I'll probably never give that up.
I got something for you, bro. Some just dropped like this week. I have it in my playlist. It's called Armin. It's called Circus. Armin Circus. And he got a track with Meth. And he shouts out all the East Coast legends. And it's like, it's fucking fire, bro. It's like back in the 90s shit. Like, I heard
let's
it.
Go.
I
was like, yeah, let's go. Let's go. Yeah.
It was hot, bro. It was hot. And it was like perfect for like today.
Yeah.
I was bumping it this morning on like my walk with my dog. People don't know what the fuck I'm listening to. I'm just like bumping. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of hot shit out there right now. And like, it's crazy because it's like we have access to like the best music ever and like some of the most unaligned music ever at the same time. Mm-hmm. But it's perfect because like we all have like I grew up with hip hop. Like, we didn't have nothing else. It was just hip hop. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't know any other music. Actually, I'm lying. I did listen to Linkin Park and Bush and Limp Bizkit, but like that's okay, because of MTV, okay, bro. MTV, right, like I was the MTV generation, so.
Right. Yeah, so music was such a cornerstone in my house growing up, Rome. It was, so there were two camps. It was my mom. So when you drove with my mom, it was Luther Vandross. It was Will Downing. It was Aretha Franklin. You know, we lived in that world. I know soul music. Then when you rolled with my dad, it was Heavy D. You know, when you rolled with my dad, it was Prince. You know, when you roll with my dad, it was James Brown. And that was just in us. It wasn't even an option. There wasn't a weekend. Monday through Friday, there were two of us. So I can't say it was busy. But my parents, they had life and they worked. And, you know, they did their thing. On Saturdays, my mom made breakfast. Sundays, too. Sometimes she'd buy something for us. But so every Saturday she made breakfast. That's when the music was on. So it was always, you know, start off with Luther in the morning. And then my dad would be like, all right, you know. And then it would be Heavy D, you know, for the rest of the afternoon with some mix of Prince. And, you know, it was embedded in everything. And certainly, I mean, when I was younger, with my cousin, we rode so hard. We rode so hard. He grew up off the Grand Concourse in the Bronx, and he would pick up the original mixtapes from DMX. He would pick up the original DJ Khaled. He would pick up the original Meth Man.
That's what I grew up with.
He would pick up the original DJ Clue. I mean, was right out of the club. Pick it right in. He would get the tape. Then,
from the African or the Chinese fucking dude.
Yes, yes.
That's where everybody got their shit.
Everybody got the.
I remember picking up. I was like, I must have been 12, bro. And I was like, Mom, could you get? Because she used to work in the city, right? So my mom used to bring me back fucking all the mixtapes, right? So be like, Mom, I want Juvenile, the G Code. I want like DMX, When Hell Is Hot, like. So I would write shit out, and like, she didn't speak English, bro. So like, she would like show it to them. They didn't speak English, you know. Sometimes it would be a hit, sometimes it wouldn't.
It's crazy. It was so. I can't tell you how, you know, I knew Rome, that was connecting my time with my cousin was connecting me to my soul. Because where I grew up, you know, I grew up with white kids, and it just wasn't mainstream at that point. It was Biggie was really the first one on the East Coast to break into white culture. So I knew listening to Rush and the Grateful Dead, like that wasn't it. Like that wasn't me, you know, like I knew that stuff. Being so connected to my cousin and being in the Bronx and city every weekend, it just spoke to my soul. So I had every mixtape, and it was just how we rolled. We rolled hard. We rolled hard. DJ Clue and not A. I mean, we rolled.
Yeah. I mean, New York Hot 97 was like, I mean, like so many things came out of like that specific space.
Angie Martinez, like, I mean, that was it. Like we didn't know anything else. And then it was 107.5 and 107.5 after 107.5, more or less after 5-6 o'clock. But Hot 97 was the only outlet. That was it. There was no choice.
Then we got 105.1.
Then we got 105.1 for a couple minutes.
And then
that was over. You know, and now it's 107.5 in the morning, and I haven't turned the radio on in 5 years.
Yeah, Spotify, so, bro. Why, like, that shit killed fucking the radio. Fuck, I want to listen to your commercials for, bro.
Right, commercials.
Like,
and for 5 minutes, not like a, not a minute. It would be, these are four or five minute longest commercials. Yeah. Long commercials. It, you know, it just didn't work. So, music has consistently been the epicenter of so many memories and so much joy. And when I train, and I'll tell you how odd it is now, when I work with younger high school kids, they don't even think about putting music on. They don't even consider it. They're, you know, I'm like, hey, where's the music? They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, what? Like, they don't even, they're not even connected to putting music on until we're in it, until a few sessions, until we're on the field. I played music. I'll tell you one of the staples. I would love to hear one of the kids in my class when I was in the classroom as a teacher. It would be a rare occasion if kids walked into my room and music wasn't playing. It would be the rarest of set the tone.
Set just the tone of the fucking workout or like whatever is to come.
And I'm saying to learn a lesson, a lesson in school. We put music on, and I would always in between periods, I would put the music on, because you come in and you hear music, and then all of a sudden it's just a different internal. It's a
you got a transition, because you're not the same motherfucker that was in the hallway coming into sitting down. Like, you have to be different. There needs to be a transition, like a rite of passage almost, you know, like man or whatever, you know, like same.
Yes. So while they would go through their do now, the music would be playing and people would say, oh, it's so distracting. I'm like, do they look distracted? You know, like, and as soon as they're done, some kids would jump up and dance, or some kids would just kind of bebop in their, you know, they hit the two-step on, you know, in their seat. And I'm like, this is the right way to live. This is the right way to move.
To learn. You know,
this is the right way to experience. This is the right way to learn. Then once the official lesson went on, yes, I would turn the music off, but I would turn it down. But it would never be off, out of their spirit and out of their mind ever, because I knew that I had to give them more. I had to give them more than what I'm putting on the board if they're really going to learn. Because I may love this passion. I might be passionate about reading. I might be passionate about science. I might be passionate about, they might not be.
Yeah.
And I have to give them something else to walk out of this room with before the bell rings.
You want to connect them to more shit.
Like, so, more exactly. So if they can learn a musical artist from me, and if that's the thing that they remember, I'll take it. If they remember a story that I told because a song came on, I'll take it. Yes, eventually they're going to remember their vocabulary words. They're going to remember the phrases, and they're going to remember Igneous Rocks. Yes, because they have to. But at the end of the day, once they leave this building, I want them to remember those stories. I want them to remember that feeling. I want them to remember that joy.
Yeah.
That connection, I can't give that through, I might not be able to give that to that kid through what I'm teaching them.
Yeah.
Because they just might not vibe with that.
Them anyway. Because that's the fucking reality.
Until once again, I had an incredible leader. So he gave me that rope. So it was super easy to fight through the snow and to be there late and to get there early. It was really easy because he just fed my spirit. But yes, absolutely.
Yeah, most teachers don't have that shit, you know?
No. I don't know anybody that does. I know that our building was special. I know that our building was unique. And it isn't the only one, but it isn't enough for sure. It isn't enough. But that's how big music is. Yeah.
If you were to get an ice cream combo made specifically for you, custom design, what would it be made out of? Like, what would it be?
So I found so much joy in ice cream again, because, you know, we walked away from dairy, and so now we've been able to create nice cream. So with frozen bananas, blueberries, and Kelly will also put honey and nuts in there. And honestly, that with the K-bowl that we have, which is a smoothie bowl, Roma, I'll tell you, that is, I love it.
Have you ever tried putting avocados in your nice cream?
We do. She'll add avocados as well with coconut. I love it. I really do. So that's really my secret. That would really be my go-to. Frozen bananas, blueberry, coconut with honey. And it's magical. I can legitimately say I really love it.
I love it. If you were a food, what kind of food would you be?
I've always stayed connected to my roots. So I really do love fish. You know, I love fish and I love vegetables. And, you know, I've grown up with that. And, and I still love grits, you know. So, you know, I don't know if I can really give those up. But I would say at the end of the day, the biggest adjustment has been pancakes, you know, putting, you know, making sure that I have a way to have pancakes that I just love. And Rome, I will say, probably my kryptonite are French fries. You know, I love French fries, but pancakes would be my number one. I've stayed connected to my fish and vegetables just culturally. But I do love pancakes and French fries.
If you were an animal, what kind of animal would you be?
I gotta fly. So I need to be the strongest, biggest bird out there. I need to fly. I need to see what the world has to offer. I need to be able to move swiftly. I need to be able to travel in a group, but have the strength to fly alone.
So now imagine you're dying. What is your last meal?
I love breakfast food. I do. So it would probably be my wife's pancakes. It would probably be her pancakes and with bananas and our homemade syrup, our crispy fried bananas with homemade syrup and pancakes. That would be my go-to. With
I love it.
Small topping of blueberries. Just Hell delicious. Yeah. Just delicious.
So your last experience, who are you going to have it with? How long is it going to be? It could be as long as you want, as short as you want. Like, what is the last thing that you want to experience before you like, I'm ready?
If I had that exact time. Yeah. So it would be my family on a boat. It would be my family on a boat and it would be us fishing and my wife making a meal. That would absolutely be it.
I love it.
Seeing them swim, jump off a boat, seeing them just so happy on the water. And, you know, Javon loves the water. You know, Bear has an appreciation for nice weather. And my daughter has appreciation for just experiences in general. And then Matthias is so young. He finds joy in seeing the other three so happy. So I know that he would love it. And Kelly, as long as the water isn't too rocky, and she doesn't get seasick, she has a real appreciation for the nice weather and water as well.
I love it. Last piece of advice to the next generation:
find your truth. And there are too many times where we're told to get a job, and we're told to get a major, where we aren't told to create a mission. And when you create a mission for yourself, a mission to inspire women, a mission to inspire young high school girls, help our health, improve our healthcare system, having a mission to prove someone's hair, having a mission to bake pies and create the greatest tasting pies, create a mission that fills your spirit. Your mission will lead to your passion, and your passion will lead to your job and your profession. And we are doing it backwards, and we're telling kids the wrong thing, and we're wondering why they're going, and we are wondering why they're going left so fast and feeling so unfulfilled. So my plea and my quest would be to create a mission for yourself. Know what problem you want to solve, identify it, and just chase it. And from there, you're going to find your passion and fuel your passion with your mission. And while you're doing that, you might have to get a job that you don't like or that you want to do forever, but it's easier to do when you're fueling and building your mission. And then your mission is going to make way for your career.
Last line, or the line that's written on your tombstone.
All in.
Balls all deep, in. Baby.
All in. Yeah. Just all in, you know, all in, all in, all in for my family, you know, all in on my health. All in on my mission, you know, all in on my dreams, all in on helping people achieve their dreams, you know, all in on being the best I can be right now for you. You know, I'm all in. If people, I think, can reflect on me and hopefully be inspired and not just inspired, but really enlightened, empowered to take imperfect action while they're doing that, then I probably did my job.
For sure. Thank you, bro. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for taking your time out, for showing up. Thank you for being you, bro. I appreciate you more than you can imagine. Is there anything that we didn't touch that you'd like to touch on? Is there any questions that I didn't ask that you would have liked me to ask, or is there something that you haven't shared that you'd like to share?
COVID revealed to me that I need to make sure that I'm asking the right questions. And I felt so trapped and heartbroken over seniors losing their year and educators feeling so overwhelmed and stressed and breaking, and writing my book, The 12 Things They Wanted a Teacher in High School But Couldn't, speaks to the hearts and the minds of personal development for educators. So as you're on your journeys and as you're out in space and as you're thinking about your kids, as we all are, and we're all thinking about our kids and our families and our communities as we're going through our day, when you have an opportunity to embrace and pick up an educator, someone of influence over our families and over our kids, please do so. When you have a chance to pour into them with a kind word or a thank you, please do so. And the goal of writing my book is to be able to give a gift to educators so they can be the greatest form of themselves. And I truly believe, I know, and I've seen it firsthand, and I've studied it long enough for nearly 20 years, that when we get the best out of the folks that hold what we deem to be the most precious thing, which is our kids and our families, we'll get the best out of our kids, and we really will influence our society.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. And whether you listened to this one episode or all of them, I want to say thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you for the support. Thank you for the love. Thank you for sharing the show with your friends. And thank you for the feedback. There's new shows posted a few times a week, so please subscribe on whatever platform you enjoy using the most, because you don't want to miss some of these superstars I'll be having conversations with. And for the listeners that have been asking if I'm available for coaching or I do live events, the short answer to that question is yes. I have a few programs available, and it just depends on what's the right fit for both of us. One-on-one, small group study, and live events based on my methods for creating inner peace, freedom, and balance. The programs are going to be focused on wellness through all the tools that I've picked up in the last 15 years of flying around the world, learning, practicing, testing, and teaching. If that sounds aligned with what you are looking for, click on the link in the show notes and fill out an application. I'll talk to you guys soon. I hope that you have a beautiful rest of your day.